All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what's happening? I am Mark Maron. This is my podcast. I'm still doing it. I'm still doing my podcast. 10 years in, we're still going at it, still going strong, doing the shows, talking to the people. It still feels good to talk to people for me. I don't know what you do with your life, but if I didn't talk to a few people a week like I talk to the people here on the podcast, I think I would get a little squirrely. Can't spend that much time in my head. It's nice to get into somebody else's occasionally for a job, 3 or 4 times a week, hopefully, talk to people. Yeah, it really keeps me sane, Today is sort of an interesting conversation because I talked to Joan Shelley. She is a singer-songwriter in the folk tradition. And I don't know what it is, but I took to her. I get sent records, folks. I get sent records, and I try to listen to all of them. You know, I get sent records from individuals. I get sent records from labels. I get sent records. I just get sent records. And sometimes I keep them, but sometimes there's just too many to keep. What am I going to do with them? I use them as barter. I go out and I trade them for records that I want. Is there anything wrong with that? I don't think so. I think that's fine. And sometimes people at labels are persistent, but it didn't. This is a weird thing about Joan Shelley and my relationship with the music. I know nothing. I knew nothing about her, and I knew nothing about the world she occupied. Now I know there's some crossover with Bonnie Prince Billy. And from there, there's a little crossover with my buddy Matt Sweeney, who knows Joan Shelley's, plays with her. I don't know if they're married or it's her boyfriend, but Nathan Salzberg, I think I asked her, I don't remember, but my buddy Sweeney knows Nathan as this sort of musicologist, this guy who he works over at the Lomax archive, I think, and he compiles all these historical songs from hundreds of years ago. How many hundreds of recorded music, but within the last century or two. And he's known for this, and he's a historian, but he's also a player, a very revered, respected guitar player, and he plays with Joan, who's a great player and a great songwriter. But there's this whole world of folk music out there. I guess it's always been there. You wonder about these worlds. You wonder about the world of jazz sometimes. I did, and it's still very active, and there's still people that love it. And not unlike this folk music world, it's still out there. I mean, it crosses over with country, Americana, and a bit of the hipster singer-songwriter thing, but there is a folk tradition, which I learned more about on Ken Burns' country documentary, which I finished. It's like 8 episodes, and they're like an hour and a half, 2 hours long, and it was fucking great. It's all the way through. Even with the new guys, it was emotional when you start to realize the community and family spirit of all these artists down there in Nashville. That was sort of the underpinning of the whole thing, was that there's a tradition to country music that is sourced in many different traditions, but there is a community of country musicians and country music in Nashville that has gone on generations. And the arc of it is just beautiful. But a lot of that stuff, some of it, was directly related to folk music. A great example, and who kind of threads through 2 or 3 episodes, was Emmylou Harris, who I didn't know a lot about, who I liked enough, but I didn't have her in the proper perspective. You know, she started as a folk artist and then got brought into country by Graham Parsons, of all people, who was not inherently a country guy, but he was another huge acolyte of the music and really kind of went to the source with it and brought her down to the source of it. And she came out sort of a historian and, again, almost a musical archivist through her own voice and renditions of old country songs to be this amazing influence in modern country music. So the folk tradition is kind of under that umbrella as well, but it still exists, I guess, is my point. I was taken by this music. by Joan Shelley's music. There was something about the way she sang, about her voice. It moved me, right? And I had the No Quarter record sent me the first record. The guy over there, I believe, is Mike Quinn, right? So he sends me that record. And then at some point, I mentioned it on Instagram, like, I really like this record. And then, like, all of a sudden, the other records start to come. So there's, like, been three records that I've gotten on No Quarter of Joan Shelley's, and I like all of them. But then right after the first one, he's been kind of trying to get me to have her on for a long time. And I just didn't know, like, what the conversation would be like. What did I know about folk music? How would it go? I wasn't sure that we could converse for an hour. She seemed like a thoughtful, quiet, artistic, creative person, like almost like a mountain person I pictured for some reason, and there's something about certain types of musicians where I'm like, I'm not sure we're going to hit it off. But Mike was persistent over time, and I was like, all right, and because I got the last record, which is great. I really enjoyed her new record here, which I think she recorded in Iceland. I believe I talked to her about it. It's called Like the River Loves the Sea. You can get that wherever you get the music that you enjoy. And I had her on, and she sang a song at the end, which is always lovely. And I have not recorded a lot of music up in this particular temporary studio, between us. I can almost move back into a garage, folks. I can almost move back into the garage. It's almost happening. So anyways, that is the story of the Joan Shelley thing. And now it fits into the whole arc of what I've been taking in with the country, the doc country, with Ken Burns' country doc. Oh, so such moving stuff, man. And so much of it had to do with community. It was funny because Nathan and Joan, Nathan Salzberg and Joan Shelley and Mike Quinn, I believe it was Mike Quinn, yes. I invited them to the Comedy Store because I was performing the night that she recorded here with me. And I was a little nervous because I felt like I was bringing these precious folk people, into the den of just pure, filth and iniquity. Is like, I'm like, you don't need to, I'd like it, if you want to come, you can come, but like, you guys are sweet folk people. And then I started really kind of spin out on, how do I take in things? How do I take in music? Are my tastes evolving as I get older? Do I still require the same things to enjoy something? Did I ever enjoy things, or did they just get me high? Did they get me riled up, or did they get me drifty? Like there's music that kind of gets you, out to sea a bit, in sort of a melancholic way. A lot of questions that were raised primarily by watching Ken Burns' country documentary. So I'm recording this yesterday. Happy Halloween. It's pretty scary out here, to be honest with you. Well, there's fires just spontaneously happening everywhere. It's fucking relentlessly aggravating and anxiety-causing that once a year for a few weeks, the entire state of California is on fucking fire. And I just got all this work done on my house. Is that the wrong way to think about it? I hope everybody who's had fire damage or is in the path of fire, I hope you're safe and your family is safe. I don't want my house to burn down. Nobody does. But I didn't even get to use the new place I created for the podcast. It doesn't matter. I hope everybody's okay. I don't want to be selfish. But it's scary. It's plenty scary on the eve of Halloween that a lot of the state is on fire. And also, given that I'm recording this yesterday, last night I recorded my special. And I don't know what to tell you. I can't tell you how it went because I haven't done it yet. I'm sitting in I've got to go down there. Today's Wednesday. I'm sorry about the time fuck and the brain fuck, but I got to go down there in like 3 hours for the sound check. My outfit, I'm shooting at the Red Cat Theater. We got the set all built. It's going to definitely look different than other comedy specials. I'll tell you that. It's just going to have a different vibe. Nice, intimate vibe. And I'm pretty excited about it. I know this shit. I've got the order written down, but I'm a little tweaked out. My body always does a thing before I have to do these things, which is even if I feel good mentally, some part of a deeper part of my brain says, well, that's okay. I'm glad you're feeling good about yourself, but we're going to fuck you from in here and Maybe you'll get a cold sore. How about a slight fever? Hey, maybe you'd enjoy a cold coming on right as you record. Like, I feel these things. They don't generally happen, but man, my brain just fucks with me. Like right now, I'm pretty casual. I'm pretty comfortable. I'm recording this, and I got to go do this. I got to go shoot my special tonight. Used to be like I'd be fucked for days just thinking about it. But look, man, I have run this material. So I'll let you know how that went for reals on Monday. But just know it happened, okay? Unless the entire city of L.A. burned down. It's so weird that the theme of my special is kind of apocalyptic, and we are, you know, we're in it out here right now. The end is not near, folks. The end is not near. It's here. It's here to stay from here on out. Enjoy. Do what you can. But let's not delude ourselves completely. All right? It's, you know, it's bad enough that, you know, I've raised the ire of the QAnon folks who actually believe that they're, you know, being guided by some religious spirit, that this massive conspiracy theory that explains everything that anyone can perceive and it connects all the dots doesn't equate to anything other than the face of Satan is ridiculi. Yes, yes, and I am being paid again by George Soros to say all of this. Got my Soros check. Did any of you other broadcasters and TV people? Have you? Because I know there was a little holdup with the Soros check because I think that you know, Obama wasn't able to co-sign on them last week. He was busy. But yeah. Do you know? Do you religious folk know who Satan really is? Do you know who he really is? So reassessment of perception. Yeah, I don't know what OK Boomer is. I didn't know any of that. And a lot of times when things are popular, I don't understand why they're popular because I don't know what they are. And I guess that's old manism. Maybe that's what you would say OK Boomer to. But I don't... I can't understand how things are popular and when I don't even know what they are. And some of them I do, but I'm still like, that's really that popular? And I don't know why I judge things like that. It's because it's a self-centered thing. It's a selfish, I don't know if it's self-centered. I don't take in a lot because there's so much going on and I'm so fucking busy. So I just assume every once in a while I'll sync up with the rest of the culture and what I'm taking in. I know a lot of people around the world are taking in that fucking Joker movie. Pretty exciting, I guess, right? To be part of in the largest grossing movie, R-rated movie in the history of movies. Whatever that means. I'm in it. Got a powerful 45 seconds in there or so. Huh? Yeah. But yeah, I've got to stop. You know, I've got to realize that I know very little about what's going on in the cultural world, except for my little part of it and however I engage with it. And I shouldn't be surprised by the popularity of things that I don't understand or know about. Because that's just old manism. I just have to accept that it's just passing me by. And a lot of times it's okay. Was not the train I needed. I guess that's part of wisdom is to realize, like, is that my train? It's not, right? Okay. Great. So Joan Shelley is here. And she's lovely, and she's great, and I enjoy her music a great deal. And I didn't know if we would be able to have a conversation just because she seemed like a special and precious folk person. But we did it. And her new record, which I think is beautiful, is called Like the River Loves the Sea, and it's available now wherever you get music. And she will play a song from that at the end of our conversation. So listen up. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale.
Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF.
I swear to God, this has been going on, Joan, for years. Mike's been emailing me.
Oh, good. He's good about that.
Is he? Is that
Is it good? You tell me. We're here now, so.
I looked it up. It was like March 3rd or March something. March 2017.
Wow.
When he first sent the batch of records.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and the batch of records, I had them. And I'd listen to him, and then I listened to him more, and then I put him aside for a while, and then I get another email a year later. What's up with that?
A year later, wow.
Or no, I mean, they came. Yeah, you know, they kept coming. But the music, I was very, I get, every time I listen to it, I get very taken, very enchanted with the whole thing. But I feel like it's not essentially my style, but that's not really true. I think I'm afraid of the vulnerability of folk music.
Sure. Me too.
Are you?
Yeah. It's not, I didn't choose folk music. I didn't listen to a lot of that stuff.
Would you call it folk music? It is though, right?
Well, like the 60s folk revival stuff. I didn't listen to that growing up.
But right. But what you do, you'd call folk music.
Because you got to call it something.
Yeah. Sure. And what happened to you?
What happened How did it happen? Well, I kind of discovered like British folk rock. And I was like well, this is badass.
Like Richard Thompson?
Sandy Denny, Richard Thompson.
Uh-huh.
And then I got into the less rock folk of England, like June Tabor. Do you know any of her stuff?
Uh-uh.
Oh, gosh. This is these incredible vocalists.
What about the sad lady? Judy Sill, is that her name?
Oh, yeah. Judy Sill was California, right?
California, but she made it big in England, kind of, I think. All right, so you're listening to that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got okay with the vulnerability through English folk rock and folk.
Yeah.
And then I came back and had more of an appreciation. Plus, I found the early string band music, which is just out of this world cool, you know.
Like, who are we talking?
Well, I found Cousin Emmy, Addie Graham, I'm talking to the females from Kentucky, Roscoe Holcomb, banjo player, stuff that sounded just like abrasive. It sounded like punk rock to
me. You know? Yeah.
And so it kind of gave me a way back in to appreciate the standard folk stuff.
Like the structure or the feeling or the vibe or
kind of a wildness that wasn't in mainstream music.
Right, right, yeah. So like, I guess people don't really associate that with those cats, but like if you listen to the string band stuff and that like Hootenanny stuff and all those old jug bands and weirdos from back then, they were really going at it because they had to get a lot of people moving.
Yeah. Yeah, the dance bands are just incredible.
Acoustic dance bands, it's crazy.
Yeah.
That some of those blues guys would just sit there with an acoustic guitar in the middle of a floor.
Yeah.
So you're from Kentucky?
Yeah.
See, the thing is
from
like-
From Louisville, yeah.
But it's not rural.
Right. So I have to make that clear. I'm not from the mountains, not from Appalachia.
But do you aspire to that?
To be from the mountains?
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people from the mountains and respect them so much and they're proud.
Yeah.
So you can't co-opt mountain culture. It's not cool, you know. We're a river town, really.
But people do co-opt mountain culture.
Totally.
It seems
it's big these days.
I know. It seems like that, you know, the sort of music that this is a weird thing because, you know, I'm a guy, I'm wearing boots that I don't need, you know what I mean? But but sure. I like them, you know, but I'm not, my beard is reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing that. I'm
something,
not,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not like doing, like, I don't know. Okay, so Kentucky, so
yeah.
what's the situation? You have a lot of siblings?
Yeah, I have a half brother, step brother, stepsister and brother.
Yeah.
So kind of complicated. I got a lot of education on the family level.
Like, how, explain it.
I mean, that's every kind of relationship, right? Like if you have, say, one mother in common, you have a certain kind of dynamic and...
Oh, you mean like with your siblings?
Yeah,
half-siblings.
Learning about love, essentially, and relationships really early on.
Well, what was your parents' situation?
My parents got divorced when I was 3. My mom got remarried when I was 4, and I was sisters with my best friend in kindergarten or whatever, suddenly. So it was pretty cool.
Oh, so your mom's husband had a kid?
2 kids, yeah.
That were around your age?
My stepfather had 2 kids, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was like we were 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Really tight, and then an older brother by 12 years, so.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was supposed to be the Brady Bunch, and it was not that at all.
No. And what's your old man, what happened to that guy?
Which this?
The father.
The my one, father?
The real father.
Real father. He stayed around, and he's a painter still, but pretty wild in terms of like when you needed him to be around, he'd be like, actually, I've got to go to New York now.
Yeah.
You know, like
an opening, got a thing,
no,
poetry reading.
He just wanted to be around really good art, and he never made it to have a gallery or anything, but he's still doing it and just.
So he was a painter, artist painter.
Yeah.
Not a wall painter.
Not a wall painter.
And he's still at it.
Yeah.
So he grew up with this bohemian dad who was a relatively absent-ish.
Yeah, he was kind of what is the word? Mercurial.
Mercurial.
Yeah. Yeah.
A wild man.
Yeah, his very, you know, and he was emotionally, as a kid, it was just like, can we stay at mom's house?
Oh, okay. Didn't
Not
know what
sure
gonna...
what he's going to be like today.
Oh, one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up with one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are we going to get? Is it going to make me cry or make me laugh?
Yeah. Yeah, because the laughing part was more, you know, we'd have more fun. He would give us recorders. He didn't want TV in the house.
Oh, no TV
he
guy.
He threw the TVs out one time.
Was he an old hippie or an old beatnik?
He was right between.
Uh-huh.
He was, let's see, he was in New York in like the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so he was between.
And he was a painter?
Yeah.
And a writer too or no?
No, just a painter. Very visually and not good with like words and stuff, he would say.
Abstract?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
he was
a
big fan of like Rothko and Clifford Still and that kind of stuff.
Floating colors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so you grew up with that and that kind of infused you with your creative spirit, do you think?
He was really encouraging.
He gave you a recorder.
So he gave us a little tape recorder and there's just hours of us entertaining, my brother and I entertaining ourselves with like, I would make up songs and, you know, skits and things and record all kinds of weird sounds and stuff. So that gave me like that validation.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's nice to have one parent that's encouraging if you're going to do the creative thing.
Yeah.
My mother used to make me practice guitar. I think most of what my mother made me do was to avoid being a mother. Like she'd be like, go in the room and do that thing so I don't have to deal with you. And
but
fortunately,
she would do it.
Yeah, fortunately, some of it was fun. You know, like, go to camp, please, so I don't have to deal with it.
And she had something to do. She was like, I had to,
Well, I don't know what she had to do. I just knew that she'd rather not deal with me, right?
Yeah, I can see why.
Sure, I know. I'm draining. I'm exhausting.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, all right, so Kentucky, Louisville, I've been there. I've worked there,
cool.
I believe. There used to be an improv there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've been there a couple of times because I have bookends that someone gave me. I used to have a friend there at Louisville. So
comedy caravan. What was it over there?
There was a comedy
like a
caravan.
Weird strip
the guy, mall. Yeah, and his name. I never worked for those people. That was a family. Sobel, I think the Sobel gigs. Not important to you.
Whoa.
So you're.
I'd like to know.
Well, he had. I think it was him that they had a bunch of one-nighters in that club there. All over that area in the region. And I never did those gigs. I never was a big Southern act. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
No.
I'm not a huge hit down south.
Really? Oh, no, it doesn't
I
make
do
sense.
Okay in Nashville.
Yeah.
I do good. You know, I do good in the sort of the blue zones of the red.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but comedy's not music. You can't just kind of charm your way in with the magic of melody. It's a point of view situation.
Yeah, wow.
You could. Yeah.
So actually you would go in the South and people wouldn't laugh or something?
No. I mean, there was one time, I had some problem in Lexington. Where is that? Lexington? That's
east
Kentucky.
East of Louisville.
Yes. There was a lot of churches in Lexington, in my recollection, like more than necessary. And I remember doing some fairly crass material about the Jesus.
Oh, wow. And they gave you,
Well, it just, you know, you can feel it kind of not land. And then you don't really, I never got asked back to the club. Is usually what happens. They'd rather have you know, Killer Bees or somebody like that. Do you know that guy?
No.
Didn't grow up with any Southern comedy?
Wu-Tang, Killer Bees are on this one,
No. He's kind of a regional guy.
Hmm.
Okay, so there you are in the city, the big city of Kentucky. Yeah. And your mom, what's your mom do?
She's raised horses her whole life, like since she was like 16. Yeah, it's a crazy world. The horse world is very strange.
And you grew up in it?
Yeah. Well, no, not in it. I actually was very contrary with my mom. She wanted me to, and it didn't make sense to me. Why would we ride in a circle? I loved trail riding.
Yeah.
I would do that with her.
And can you still ride a horse?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you ride horses?
No, not regularly.
Mm.
No, it feels kind of unnecessary. I like horses a lot.
How would horse riding be necessary at all now?
Well, there's farming. People still like cut down trees and drag them through the woods with horses.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Seems
it's better.
Old school.
You don't have to like plow the forest.
Oh, I see. Use the horse.
Yeah. Do it. Come on.
But what kind of stuff, your mom trained them?
She would train them, breed them, kind of make these super horses.
Oh, really?
So, not race horses.
Yeah. What for what?
It's for what? Well, it's essentially like having the Corvettes.
An experiment? Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. So, for rich people to buy a super horse just to have almost as a hobby.
Hobby horse. Yeah, totally.
That was what it was.
And that didn't appeal. You know, like I wanted everything to have a use.
Right. That didn't appeal to you. It wasn't practical to have a super horse that didn't do anything.
Well, it did a lot, yeah.
But genetically, did they breed them to be super horses or she just train them?
It's just the same way you would, I mean, that people breed dogs or something and they look for the best traits and not genetic mutate, whatever.
Right. It's purebred stuff. They'll have a genealogy, a family situation, the horses.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. Yeah,
descended from. Mm-hmm.
I grew up in, we had a show dog.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to the show?
Yeah, my old man, my dad showed the dog for a while. He was a champion.
Good for him.
A thoroughbred old English sheepdog.
Cool.
Well, yeah, dog shows are weird, man. I was pretty
entertaining.
Young. The people are, it's a little much.
I go just to watch sometimes.
You go to dog shows?
Convention Well, yeah. I mean, it's like a whole different planet.
Yeah? It's something like you're like
I've
the dog
to
shows in town? Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It's really cheap entertainment, isn't it?
I guess so.
And people, that walk that they do.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's just, they're like stage moms to dogs. You know what I mean? Like, there's this weird kind of like control freaky.
Yeah.
You know, come on. Yeah. But, you know, don't listen like a kid. I always feel like the dog looks a little kind of like, what? I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little nervous about it.
Well, yeah.
Some of them are beautiful, though.
Yeah.
Do you go to horse shows?
No.
That's because you're fighting your mom. You refuse?
Well, no, I go and like see what she's up to when she goes and stuff, but I.
But if she's doing the horse thing, that's sort of a country thing. She must be out in the country somewhere.
Oh, she went to like old cattle, what was the ranch out in New Mexico. She went to school out in New Mexico and would just like go. Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Where'd she go to school in New Mexico?
She went to University of New Mexico.
Oh, right in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's
got a connection. She's probably the same age as me, your mom.
I had older parents. So
oh, yeah. Is she around still?
Yeah.
All right. So you're being nice? Is that what's happening right now? Being
what
polite.
Do you mean?
You're not going to say anything too bad about
Well, I'm not going to say her age because I love you, Mom.
Oh, sweet. And what did your stepdad do?
He, medical equipment sales. I can't remember. I always didn't get it as a kid. He would have like medical masks and tweezers in the basement and stuff. He would go take those to hospitals and sell them.
Oh, he was like a door-to-door tweezer salesman.
That's right.
For hospitals.
Yeah, like we would find the razor blades in the basement and like be playing with them when we shouldn't have been. I remember just like cutting my hands all up and not wanting to tell the parents.
Like, oh wow, like disposable
silently.
Surgical blades and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
So he's kind of a supplier? You work for some sort of supplier?
I guess. Well, if you're the salesperson.
Yeah. You got to represent somebody. He wasn't just winging it. We're assuming.
Yeah.
So
God, I hope not.
Just orders
illegal.
It on. Yeah. Just has boxes of stuff for hospitals.
Yikes.
So when's the guitar start happening?
I was writing songs from a young age, but I never had an instrument. So I think I found the guitar. My mom had a guitar in the attic and I was maybe 16 years old.
It was just up there?
Yeah. She had a guitar that she kept
That from she used to college. Play?
Yeah, she used to play.
Was it a good one? Was it like an exciting thing to find?
I think it was hard to play. Like the action was really high.
Steel string. Yeah.
It wasn't super friendly on like a young finger situation, but.
But you figured it out?
Yeah, there was a chord chart up there and I just kind of learned chords and.
You did on your own?
Yeah. Well, they had the circles, you know, you put your fingers where the circles were.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, I taught myself.
Do you know a lot of chords?
Now I do. But I didn't, you know, only, you only need like three
you do,
for a long
only
time.
Need three. Mm-hmm. For a lifetime sometimes.
Yeah. some people are making money at it too.
Some people go three chords for the whole run. Yeah. Maybe add a fourth one in there, a minor.
Oh my gosh, got to get that minor, that's important.
So you start playing on your own and you never take a lesson?
I did take a few lessons from different, like I dabbled in lessons a couple times and didn't take guitar lessons, but I took banjo a couple from a friend of mine.
Just a friend of yours showed you how to play banjo?
Yeah.
What's the, you got a finger picking, right? Did
There's
you start
that,
doing
yeah.
finger picking like on guitar?
No, I did strummy stuff.
How'd you train yourself to finger pick?
Can you finger pick?
I'm trying.
Yeah, I mean, you just practice, right?
But do you do two finger or all of them?
On guitar?
Yeah.
I probably use four.
Yeah, like thumb and three?
Yeah. I do a lot of rolls because of learning banjo. Like I can...
Oh, right.
Or different plucking patterns where you use two and then one hits the...
Yeah, I just had a minor breakthrough with the finger picking. I don't practice it as much as I should. I know that if I just practice it, I can get it. But I needed...
You refused to practice.
No, I practice, but I just play. I don't, you know, like I recently, but I tried to figure out Sam's Boogie, you know, the Magic Sam thing.
Is that a big popular?
It's not a big popular anything. It's an old piece of tape, an old footage of Magic Sam playing someone else's guitar and doing this crazy riff. And, you know, I talked to Sweeney about it. You know Sweeney.
Yeah.
You know, and he tried to figure it out, and he eventually figured it out. And I'm like, can I figure? And I figured out the first part of it, which is pretty exciting. And it's two finger picking, though.
I love two finger picking. I think that's really all I mean, when I think like R.L. Burnside, there's this amazing video
of
him playing and just using
two.
So little. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Sweeney's into now, too. People, no one's playing with picks anymore. Everyone's going with their thumb.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like, it's like, I don't know, it's some purist shit. But then I start looking at people. There's a lot of dudes that don't play with picks. They just use their thumb. Sometimes
maybe you're
they
just becoming aware, and it's always been there.
I guess, is there a different sound? It's kind of a different sound.
Yeah, I mean, picks to me sound, well, I play a different kind of music. So it's quieter, right?
Right.
But I've always liked the connection. Like rhythmically, I didn't like having the pick in the way.
Yeah.
Something to me, unless you're doing like Travis picking and all that, where you're trying to get as many
notes in
as possible.
Yeah, it's hard to get a lot of notes in with just your thumb, isn't
it? Yeah, unless you're doing all the fingers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you start writing songs now. Like I'm like this is the weird thing about you and the music.
Oh, tell me.
Is that like I connect to music and melody more than I connect to words generally.
Yeah.
Like I listen to things that way. You know, I don't listen to songs to hear what's being said most of the time. I just get moved by someone's voice or a melody or you know, just the tone of the music. And then I had to go in and read the words, listen to the words, look at your words. You know?
You had to because you were doing
No. Homework. Because I wanted to, I've been a little better at doing it, listening. Because I don't understand how songwriting works. You know, obviously there's some songs like Beatles songs or whatever that are in my head and I know a lot of songs, but I only maybe know half a verse of it too. But,
yeah.
But the whole idea of songwriting to me, how is it different than poetry really?
Well, like you're saying, I think people can get away with nonsense if the feeling is there.
Right. Yeah.
And people have been saying nonsense in pop music and rock music forever.
I know.
Like.
Yeah.
And but not always. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like hey, hey, hey's and yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you really listen to some of that stuff, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I've ruined music for me in a lot of ways for trying to get better at writing lyrics. And then by listening to lyrics, I can't listen to a lot of songs I used to love.
Oh, really?
Or like, you know, some Rolling Stone songs were just like, oh, God.
Really? Yeah. Terrible?
Well, just, yeah, because it's almost conflicting, too. It'd be like when you get a refrain, or you say like the yeah, would follow something that you wouldn't say yeah to.
Right.
And that kind of stuff that, there was, you know, the was logic all swagger. Was off.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I listen to some songs, I'm like, that's stupid. But then you got to realize, like, well, who's singing it? And does it fit them? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I know more AC/DC lyrics than I'd really like to be admit. But it seems perfectly fitting for that band.
Yeah. You know,
whatever the hell they're singing about. It's pretty basic, kind of lewd.
Yeah.
But it's okay. But then I read your lyrics and they're complicated because they're not, it's not, a lot of them don't, there's no narrative. There's no, it's not exactly a story being told. But they're a little more cryptic in that, like, I can relate to half of what's in there, and it moves me in a way that I don't understand. And that's the magic of it, right?
Right. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the best case.
In the new record, there's a weight to it. I don't think it's sad, but it's a lot of the songs are reflections on love, possible, you know, maybe impossible, maybe passing, maybe age, maybe sort of like, this should have happened, but it didn't. A lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's so much to deal. I mean, I think of, there's something that, what is his name? Federico Garcia Lorca.
Uh-huh.
He was on this, listening to music that was this other section of the brain. I think there's just music for dancing.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's music for coping with everything difficult in your life. And
right.
That music, he found it in lullabies and all this stuff, and like the dark stories that we used to tell. And a lot of traditional music has that murder ballad situation or that
long black veil.
Yeah, just loss and sadness.
That song kills me.
I mean, right. I want songs to kill us in these ways. So long black veil. I think I did play it and like an open mic situation.
Oh, really? In an open mic situation?
Yeah.
I like the band's version a lot because I like the way Rick Danko sang.
It's amazing voice. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And talk about
makes me cry just saying his name.
The warble in his voice is so heart grabbing.
The vulnerability of him.
Yeah.
Is like sort of insane, but it's different than Richard Manuel, who like is just too much for me. Too sad. I can hear the two sadness. And Robbie, I don't deal with. Levon, there seems to be a kind of like a managing vulnerability.
Yeah.
But Danko is just sort of almost childlike. I think I just explained all of the band's vocal capacities.
Yeah.
and dismissing Robbie entirely.
Mm-hmm. As you should. I'm sorry.
And I've talked to that guy.
Oh.
I know that guy. He's another one though, like, man, I try to figure out how he plays and whether, you know, what makes it like boring to me in a way.
Oh.
And because he's obviously a great player, but you don't know any of his licks really. It's kind of weird.
But
I know
that can
the songs.
Be great. Yeah.
I mean, he can definitely play, but like I'm like I don't look at him like I don't like I want to play like him.
Yeah.
Who do you want to play like?
Nathan Salzberg. Who I play with all the time. Yeah.
Now, what's up with that guy? Now, you guys are a couple?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So you guys.
I don't like talking about it too much because it's like, oh, I'll have to answer for that. Or when people are watching us play any lyric that has to do with love, they'll be like, oh, she says that about him. Right.
Limits. Well, I'm telling you, if a lot of them are about him, he's in trouble.
Right. It's not all about Nathan.
Well, it took me a long time to realize that too about songwriters. It's like it's not all autobiographical. Like I think I learned it when I talked to Nick Lowe. I'm like, it's not you. You're not writing about you. He's like, no, these are characters, or they're coming from a different place. It's not all me.
Well, that and also it is all him. Right.
Right.
It's saying you're having a dream and somebody appears.
Yeah.
That somebody is still in you. So you're
right.
Yeah. I don't allow people to say that it's not them.
You don't allow it.
I don't permit that knowledge to penetrate my brain. Yeah. I still think as much as we try to say we're telling the story of somebody else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it was like with him, it was the beast in me, which he wrote for Johnny Cash. So I think in that situation, you can sort of write for that character.
Yeah,
you
put
know?
On a voice. And I do that too.
You do. Like in in what situation would you do that?
Well, there's a song, Jenny Come In. I remember thinking like, I want to sing in the voice of a male.
Yeah.
Like, from a perspective of, like, the, but the male that I reference is one that I'm making. So,
yeah.
And it kind of had a country, yeah. I didn't write for someone like, this one's for Taylor
right,
Swift
right,
or
but
something.
You, but you were thinking in terms of, like, a dude.
Different. Yeah. Different perspective. Try, you know. So.
But Nathan Salzberg, I knew nothing about him really until yesterday.
Yeah.
I think. Because, like, I get, Sweeney was like, no, you got to check. And he texted mm-hmm. me all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have time to go through it. I know he works for the Alan.
He still does, yeah.
It's the Alan Lomax Archive?
He's the curator for the Alan Lomax Archive.
So he's like, he's in charge of the roots of all American music and some global music.
For getting some of it out there, yeah.
So that means like, and he's also a guitar player, like an extraordinary finger-picking maniac.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as a maniac, but he can play.
Yeah.
And he has all these resources.
Yeah.
Historical resources.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you meet that guy?
I met him when I came back to Louisville in 2009.
Yeah.
I saw him playing with some friends. Yeah.
In Louisville. He lives there.
Yeah.
That's where the archive is?
Well, since it's digitized, he was in New York for 7 years, and then once it was all digitized, he could live anywhere and still do this.
Talk about him too much, but like, what is the responsibility of managing a stagnant archive?
Right. Well, there's still so much that isn't out there. So you're
really?
Always, yeah, he deals with putting things up on YouTube and citing everything. And
oh, okay. So he's like taking all of Alan Lomax's field recordings.
Yeah.
And putting them into, digitizing them and then getting them out into the world.
Yeah. Some of it's in the Library of Congress. Most of the older stuff is in there, but there's still stuff. I think it's from the 70s, but I don't know. 70s on that was in Alan Lomax's collection that they still have to manage and update the, you know, where I do some of it with him, and it's like on DVC cams, like old formats that you'd have to put on a newer format and stuff like that.
Oh, like, what's a DVC cam?
I don't even know. I mean, a little tape.
Oh, okay.
Little videotape.
So it's an ongoing, so he has to sort of, he has to experience and discover all this weird old music.
Yeah.
Like weekly.
And try to find its context and maybe any living relatives and stuff like that.
To the performers?
Mm-hmm.
So there's whole stories that unfold.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, the best case scenario is you get to bring that music back to a community that didn't know that's what they produced, and they can find, you know, get royalties back to the people
who's
descended from the... Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a lot of big royalties with some of that stuff?
I mean, Beyonce sampled some stuff from the archive.
That's
yeah,
right.
There's big money in sampling from it.
Oh, she
Moby did all that stuff. You remember?
Yeah.
Did they
just take it, thinking they could just get away with it?
No, I think they know that it costs money to sample things these days.
Does he start introducing you to this stuff that changes your approach to music?
Sure. Yeah. As soon as I met him and knew what he was up to, I was like, I need as many of the like female voices that you have, because there was a big Kentucky trip, the Southern Journey, that's actually the 60th anniversary of the Southern Journey for Alan Lomax, and he went through Kentucky and down to the Delta, and I wanted to hear some women, because so much of the history of recorded music excludes women's voices, and I was just ready to like get the download. I just wanted all of it. I wanted to consume it. And he was like, here's a few things, but you know, he wanted, all of us can research this on our own. It's out there. So.
Right. So he just didn't want to overwhelm you. He just kind of give you a taste. Here's a few.
I think he wants people to do their own work too.
Dating the guy and he's got.
Well, now I can. Yeah. That was when I first met him and everything. He gave me some great Aunt Molly Jackson.
That's how he reeled you in.
Right. Well, we were friends for a long time. And then
here's some old women singing songs.
That's how you get me, world. Yeah. Seriously.
I'm going to blow your mind with some old tracks. It worked.
And
seriously,
look up Aunt Molly Jackson. She's got one of the creakiest, oldest sounding voices ever. You would be amazed.
And that effect did you have?
Well, I was just excited to hear. She was an activist, too, so I was excited to hear this, like, woman from the coal fields just being like, you know, this isn't right, and having kind of a sense of traditional music, and then also she wrote songs herself and stuff
so,
like that.
So protest music, early protest music in a way, kind of?
Yeah, she went up to New York, and I think that crew were excited to have an authentic mountain person come in and encouraged her.
Do you know that movie, Llewyn Davis?
Yeah, yeah.
That end of that movie is so genius. With the the dulcimer player. Remember the woman who came from the real hills?
Oh, yeah.
And
was that Gene Ritchie in the movie or no?
I don't remember who played that part, okay. But the dude, her dude, after Llewyn, who was drunk, mocked her, beat the shit out of him in the alley, you know?
Man, I need to watch it again.
It was beautiful, you know, but it was that moment where the hipster, the appropriator, you know, the sort of the scene of that time in the 60s of these folkies, you know, for him to be condescending to, you know, a true kind of like Appalachian, you know, dulcimer playing woman, you know, and then the cowboy, the man that she was with just popped him in the alley. It was such a schooling.
Yeah, well, that was what Alan Lomax was trying to do 60 years ago. The Journey was in a reaction to the 60s folk revival in New York, because he was seeing all these like young college kids being like, we are so proud of themselves for reviving dead music.
Right.
And he was like, this music is still alive in the places it came from. And he wanted to record it and kind of prove to the young folks who were kind of co-opting it so aggressively.
Right.
That there was still a living tradition and they didn't need to play it for them, you know, like for it to still be alive. They just needed to support maybe the places that it came from.
Oh, interesting. So that was the agenda.
Yeah. He was out to prove it.
Yeah, because like I saw a documentary about Fahey and a couple of the guys that, Fahey was always after Skip James, I think, right? That was his big grail. And then there was these other dudes that were after Death Letter. Why am I forgetting his name? It's not Fred McDowell. Sunhouse.
Yeah, Sunhouse.
Yeah. So it was like, that was a journey for these two crews of like musicians and blues nerds, was to find these acts. And I think that still plays with Lomax's intention, is that once they
found out, Fred McDowell,
He found Fred McDowell, but I think that Fahey and his cohort found Skip in a hospital.
Yikes.
But he was all right. You know, they pulled him out and he lived a few years and they had him up in Newport and he churned out a couple records. And the guys who found Son House, they thought he was down south. He turned up in upstate New York.
Wow.
You know, like just hanging out. And they pulled him out and tried to get, there was one Newport festival where a lot of those cats, it was the first resurrection of a lot of those dudes. And
footage is so good.
Some of them could handle it, some of them couldn't, you know, ultimately. Mm. But Skip was like, that guy's magic. Where's that voice come from?
Yeah.
I talked to Taj Mahal once, you know, in the old house, and he picked up this crappy old guitar I had. Because I was asking him where Skip comes from. Where's that guitar come from?
Yeah.
He goes, comes from Africa. And he picked up this K guitar I got.
Beautiful.
Yeah. But it's only, I never even changed the strings on it. And he just lays out two like Senegalese kind of like Skip Jamesy things for 3 seconds. Taj picks it up and I'm like, we'll do it. And that was it. He didn't play. He didn't bring guitar. He wasn't going to play. But for that 3 seconds, like it was so immediate and so connected and so quick. Like 3 notes. I'm like, wait, what is that? How'd you do that?
Yeah.
So you go back to Kentucky. Do you, what's your lineage? Do you feel like you come from that?
Look into it like.
Like your past. Like, you know, how do you like.
Genealogically?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're attached to where you grew up, but I mean, has your family been there forever?
Yeah, there's some. I just visited my great, great, great grandfather and grandmother's graves in Hanson, Kentucky, but that's like Western.
Yeah.
So a lot of the tobacco region in my family.
Yeah. And what was there? Where'd they come from? Ireland, Britain,
all over.
Wales?
Like deeply mudded.
Yeah.
But like, there is some.
But they've been there since like the
German,
16, 1700s?
English.
That kind of shit? Like way back? You don't know.
I think I've got some Irish that's like 3-4 generations back.
Yeah.
So that's the only one that I can say like I know.
Right. So what do you like when you listen to this music? Like, what are the threads of it of the kind of stuff you're resonating with? Is it Celtic? Like, what?
Oh yeah, I love that stuff.
Right, because that's
a lot
mode.
is similar to a lot of like North African stuff too. You hear that like modal,
yeah,
kind of deeply soulful,
yeah,
yeah.
It's weird how it's all connected, huh?
It is.
So, who are some of the other sources? Like when you get these older acts, these older performers, these older artists, these women that you were researching, what are some other names that moved you?
Well, there's a lot of actually English guitar players that I deeply connect with, but Dick Goggins, Scottish, Nick Jones, English guitar player.
Yeah.
And I said June Tabor, she was a big one, but for, and Anne Briggs, another English person.
Yeah.
I don't know, a lot of them actually less than voices.
Yeah.
Were songs, like melodies that I would be really struck by.
Yeah.
And a lot of those come in the modal form. And so like there's old songs, like string band songs that were child ballads, you know, the child ballads, English, like ancient songs that came over with immigrants to the United States. And a lot of them were left in the mountains because that's where radio didn't kind of homogenize.
Yeah.
So that's why we think of them as mountain songs, but they were all over. And Kentucky was a very wild west for the colonies.
Uh-huh.
A lot of English, Irish music came in and blended with like the African-American music and the Native American music. And you hear it in so much of the banjo songs that I love, like Darlin' Corey, Sugar Babe is this one about kind of like, I guess, a stripper. It's a very strange lyrics. And then like a lot of the Lord Daniel stuff, stories about like a pregnant woman coming to a castle and being like, please let me in, this is your child, and or whatever. And then Lord being like, no thanks.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. And it's sung in these great, like, Southern accents, you
know?
How did you,
Where do you get this stuff? Where is it, online?
Oh, yeah, it's all online. A lot of people are doing versions of it, but there's some great stuff in the archive, the IMX archive.
And that's free?
Yeah. Yeah, there isn't a new podcast. A new podcast.
Oh, great. That's what the world needs.
I know. There's a great cartoon. It's two people sitting down, and it's one person saying to the other, like, I'm thinking about stopping a podcast. It's really good.
Yeah. Put an end to it. But what's the new podcast?
But it's Nathan digging in the archive and kind of pulling it out.
Mm-hmm. Is there any Lomaxes alive?
Yeah. Anna Lomax, his daughter, still alive and running the organization.
Huh.
And son, I think.
So it was always acoustic music with you? There was not a time where you were in a rock band?
I definitely had played in a band first. Acoustic came later.
But like, what was the thing? Like, because when I listen to the music and I look at the pictures on your records and the poem that came with the last one, it seems like an entire way of life.
The acoustic way of life?
Yes.
It is. I learned that. I mean,
was it what didn't weren't did you rock out?
I mean, I
when you were younger.
Okay.
I know.
<I'm just kidding. laughs> I did play with a 5-piece band and the record Electric Ursa, which was my second. The first and second ones are more a rock situation, and they come from that Louisville. I played with a lot of Louisville musicians like Rachel Grimes and Joe Manning and Kevin Ratterman, people that came from like the punk rock scene. And that's a lot of what music in Louisville now is, like, people that came to folk and country music through punk.
Because you all grown up.
Yeah, that. Plus also, when you look for the same impulse, but it's kind of matured, like you can't kind of go back and listen to punk bands.
Right.
What they were saying was a little bit youthful and maybe too simple. But so when it gets more complex, you see a lot of people looking to old time music for that kind of the wildness I was talking about.
Yeah.
A little bit of a counterculture that's like, no, we don't want to sound smooth. We don't want to sound auto-tuned and I mean just
who's doing that stuff? Like, I mean, well, that's interesting to me that a lot of these, because it's happened, I've seen it in other, like in some of the older punk rock guys, is that if you stay in the game and you still have the spirit for it, even if you're not making any bread, you know, you've got to grow somehow. You've got to age into it. You can't be playing that shit, you know, in your 50s, even in your 40s, if you didn't make a hit to begin with, right? So you sort of got to evolve with the music.
Yeah.
And that makes total sense. What's your relationship with Michael Hurley's music?
Oh, just pure love.
I can't get over that very first record.
Was that the one he did for Folkways?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I cannot get over that record. Like Blue Mountain, that song Blue Mountain. I mean, what the fuck? Where did that come from?
He's like a alien child person.
He's still around, too.
Yeah, we're going to go see him in Oregon.
Do you know him?
Yeah, we played shows together. And
you and Nathan?
He's hung out at my house, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
He's like still, I gave him, he came to Louisville one time and came over to my house and I just sat down like a bunch of colored pencils and some paper and a case of beer in front of him and he just slammed the case of beer and made the most amazing drawings.
It's weird. If it could be a child if it was a box of cereal.
Yeah. It's good. Unfortunately, it's not. Yeah. Maybe that would have been better.
Yeah. Wait, so he made an amazing drawing. Was he passed out on top of it?
No, he's got this energy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's like 75 or something.
How's his shows? Good?
Yeah, he can be kind of wild. You don't know what you're going to get.
So tell me, like, now answer some songwriting questions, and then maybe we'll play a song. Mm-hmm. The new record, I have the self-titled one, I have Rivers and Vessels, and then I have the new one, like the River Loves the Sea. But this last one, or the one before this one you did with Tweety?
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
I've interviewed that guy. So how do you know him? How do you guys all meet each other? And Will Oldham too, who I don't think we like each other. I don't know.
I'm sure he doesn't not like you.
I don't know. I've met him once and it was difficult. It was awkward. I was with Sweeney. Uh-huh. He seemed to be like, yeah, okay, all right, fine. You know, like, just dismissive and fuck it. So like, what am I gonna do? I know he's a wonderful artist and he's contributed a lot to the world, but I've met him and he seemed to just ice me.
I think Will's more a mirror. So you just saw what you wanted to see in the mirror of Will.
Do you really think that?
I think the way he holds himself makes people really doubt themselves. And he's not exactly like forthcoming and... Mm. Makes so you at ease, right? So
he's socially awkward and it's somehow my fault?
Yes. I don't know. Actually.
That's very good. Okay, I believe you. No, I mean, look, I like the guy. Matt likes him. Everybody likes him. No. But like people have been like, why don't you talk to him? And I'm like, we couldn't even manage a greeting.
Oh, man. It depends on, and where were you?
On the street, yeah, New York.
That's probably not the best.
No, I respect the guy. I like his stuff. But how'd the Jeff Tweedy thing come?
Okay, so... Jeff and I met the first time on a radio show or a mountain stage in West Virginia on Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But he had heard the record before Over and Even.
Yeah.
And I think it's through just being in music all this time and you know common people or people in common. And James Elkington was playing in the Tweety Band at the time. And he's a good friend of ours who produced this last record. And
in Iceland.
In Iceland, yeah. And he's played with Nathan Salzberg. They have a guitar duos thing, or duo guitar records.
Right.
And so I think that's how, through Jim Elkington and Bean, you know, playing music together and stuff. So we talked, Jeff and Nathan and I were talking, and I guess I didn't expect for him to have such serious, like, punk rock roots.
Who?
It was cool.
Jeff.
Yeah. It was cool to know that because I guess I was afraid of working with people who didn't have that sense of like perfect isn't good, let's not go for perfect,
right?
You know, and or pure and all those words that just like make me cringe, and people that have that background in punk rock and just kind of like are open,
they
to
know
the,
how to let it be raw, let it you know kind of be flawed and raw,
human
for sure, and then you just kind of hammered it out.
Yeah, he had some time in the loft, and I
hear that loft's amazing. I've never been there.
God, you gotta go.
I've talked to him, and as a producer, he was good to work with.
Yeah, I was like, is this gonna happen? Because we were supposed to show up on a Monday, and he's like, oh, actually, I can't be there on Monday. I was like, oh, here it goes. It's gonna fall through. Mm. And it turns out when he came back, it was because he was taking Mavis Staples to the like president's. Awards.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess that's a pretty
medal
good
of honor presentation kind of deal.
Yeah. Is it something with a rainbow?
Did she get a medal?
Yeah.
Oh,
she got recognized by Obama. So, but then after that, it was great. He was just, I didn't expect him to play on the record, but he played bass all over the record and was so kind of the counterintuitive. I think he played like reverse sounding bass line and stuff like that. That was just so cool. And all these, the whole place is lined with ancient guitars and basses and amps. And it's a dream for a guitar player to be there.
I got to go check it out. Yeah. I primarily deal with new instruments.
No, you don't. I'm looking around.
That amp is old. Yeah. That, I guess that Strat, I bought that new in 86. So that's pretty old now.
New then. Okay, yeah.
It's 96, 2006. So it's like 35 years old,
yeah,
that thing. I just got it out again. This J45, relatively new, that one.
Jay, cool. It's Do you like new stuff better for some reason?
I just like, I don't know. I have not gone shopping for really old shit. I have one old, weird, big Gibson in the closet that I really like. It's called an FJN. They only made them for a little while. It's got this short, fat, classical-sized neck on a steel string. Have you seen those things? It's got the double, it's got two white pick guards, like flamenco pick guards. Jackson Browne plays them. You see them around not too often, but they're a very full-sounding guitar. I have that old thing. I just haven't gone shopping for them, and they're exorbitant price-wise. And I've got some reissues, and I'm not a professional guitar player, and I don't want to be one of those idiots who amasses, you know, precious cargo from people that really could probably, you know.
Well, that's nice of you.
I'm not a collector. I just like to play.
Yeah.
You know? What do you play?
That's good. I play a Collings. It's like a 90-something.
Yeah.
It's an orchestra model, so smaller kind of guitar, more for finger picking. And I got that from my cousin when she passed away. So I've just had this like way too fancy for me guitar this whole time.
Oh, really?
Because before that, like I was just playing, I think I had a pretty basic Washburn, or not a Washburn, like a modern, just a new.
And this one's sort of a little better?
This one's very much, I just could not
buy this guitar. What happened to your cousin?
She had cancer.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. So why Iceland? What was that about? You know, like, this new record's great. It's beautiful. You know, they all sound production-wise kind of different, you know? And I mean, Iceland, I've never been there. I have a romantic idea of it. It seems like spatially it would be a good poetic place to be.
Yeah.
Why'd you go there?
Well, kind of for that reason, they all sound different. Like, I like to not revisit the same experience again, so that there's some kind of new connection to have, not a habit, like not so you're relaxed that you're not paying attention
or
trying out new things. So I just find it's rewarding to go take people out of their home life habits, be in a concentrated period of time and work there. Like, for example, so Iceland, I thought this would be great. This is the same studio that Will Oldham did The Letting Go, one of my favorite albums of his.
Yeah.
Bjork helped set it up, I think, Greenhouse and all this stuff. It was crazy to get the opportunity to do it.
Bjork was there?
She's one of the
people
who started. Oh, yeah. We had a Bjork spotting, but we didn't hang out.
Oh.
Yeah. But the studio is of her and another fellow's brainchild, yeah.
And is it like nice? Like,
super nice.
Is it on, can you see?
You can see it online. Greenhouse.
Pretty stuff, though?
Mm-hmm.
Is it sitting in the middle of something beautiful? Is it on a fjord or something?
It's outside Reykjavik. And kind of you can see the mountains in the distance. But nearby, we were told just as we were leaving the studio that there was the last witch in Iceland was drowned in this, like, witch drowning pool right beside it.
Oh.
It's like, this is darker than I thought.
How do you feel? How do you feel it affected the album?
At the witch giant
the
pool?
Witch. Well, not the
being in
Iceland.
Being in Iceland, it's just, so Kentucky's really a humid place.
Yeah.
I think of atmosphere as really influencing people's mindset and music.
Mm-hmm.
It actually influences the reverberation of sound.
Yeah.
So you're kind of in this clear feeling environment with a different kind of light. And it just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Did
you write any of the songs up there?
No.
You brought them all with you?
So all the songs were written in Kentucky.
And when you write a song, do you think in terms of melody first, or do you just write
the
stuff?
Yeah, the same moment. So I would always use the melody to find the words, I guess
that's
how I put it, yeah. Like you were saying, because if I went to sit down and just write linearly, I don't think my brain works that way.
You don't come up with a phrase.
Right. Just there's nothing like with music, you can start the line
and yeah.
some part of your brain knows the rhyme is coming and it works ahead of you and
right.
it works behind. But music is the way that it opens that kind of interconnectivity, that cyclical
kind
of
right.
thinking for me.
Right. Oh, wow. Because I'm going to write a song soon.
Can't wait.
I think I've written some already.
You think?
Yeah. I don't think I'm good at melody, man. I mean, it's like I'm a 1-4-5 dude, you know what I mean? It's like it's straight up for me, three chords. If it's not 1-4-5, it's one, you know, like if it doesn't go, you know, sometimes I like go.
That's a lot of chords.
Right, so it's like one, it'd be an A, right? So one, G, I love that thing. Like,
that's like nice.
Yeah, but then.
What makes that hard to sing a melody to?
Well, I just feel like it's always going to be the same melody, and it's always going to go along with the bass chords because I don't have the range to understand really how melody works. I don't, you know, I'm not that confident a singer, so it's always going to be some form of like, la 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 la.
Because you're following the chords.
Yeah, yeah. So like, how do you get out from under that? I don't know.
I come up with all kinds of constraints that helps me. Like, if you were to say, okay, you're not going to write a melody, you're going to just sing the same note the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
that's when the chords are changing. That's
just
a melody.
Stay on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just got to just do it. I just got to quit everything. And
just throw your whole
guitar.
Heart in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's time.
Good.
That's what the world needs is another guy in his mid 50s to enter the musical ecosystem.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, an amateur.
If more people enter the music system.
A hobbyist. Another hobbyist has to enter with his big ideas.
I don't think music, no, because that's, it's like, it's hard stuff. It's not a hobby. It's not
painting
model planes.
I can't like that. I was terrified to sing in public forever.
But now
to
you
me,
do?
I will with my eyes closed. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I'm not great at playing and singing. I can do it with some stuff at the same time. But to me, it was so revealing, so exposing, so vulnerable that like there was no way to hide at all. Whereas musicians feel differently. Because I do comedy, I have no problem with that. But musicians are like, how the fuck do you do that? You know, they're more comfortable with singing.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, singing is just sort of like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm okay at it, but it's just too, like, you can't hide at all. I don't think.
Yeah, but you can hide if you have like a 5-piece band and there.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, we don't need an audience. There's no one here. That's all right, we got us. Let's go.
Yeah.
All right, you want to play a song now?
Sure.
Do you feel good about what's happened here?
Yeah, I always feel bad about talking about music, but...
You do?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it was made to stand alone, probably.
I know, but you know, you got to go out and sell it.
Oh, gosh. Well, then that's why I feel bad. Yeah.
You're doing all right, though, right?
Yeah, doing fine.
People come?
Yeah, people come.
Well, that's nice.
People that like quiet music come.
Quiet music.
Yeah.
The quiet people.
The quiet, you know, tender-hearted people.
You see them out there.
Yeah, they exist. They
I know they exist. No, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But like, oh, it's so nice. It's so sweet. You got to take care of them.
Yeah. We
right?
all got to take care of each other.
That's what I hear. All right. Let's try and figure this out.
Okay.
See, I think that sounds pretty good. Let me get levels. What are you going to play?
I'll do the fading.
Okay.
A spring remembered, the taste of gin, I lit a light upon our skin. Your form it lingers, I trace just where you've been. Songs we sang I'll sing again. When it breaks down, babe, let's try to see the beauty in all the fading. I saw the river, thick with mud, break through the banks and run. And I confess I liked it, I cheered the flood. When the water hit the banks and won. When it breaks down, babe, let's try to see the beauty in all the fading. The roads are endless, they seem to grow. Vines that wind around the world. No, I hate it to leave my home, but I love that car when I need to go. When it breaks down, babe, let's try to see the beauty in all the fading. Kentucky stays in my mind. It's sweet to be 5 years behind. And that's where I'll be when the seas rise, holding my dear friends and drinking wine. When it breaks down, babe, let's try to see the beauty in all the fading. It breaks down, the stakes get high. See the beauty in all the fading.
Yeah, that was so good. Feel good to you? Feels good. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm shocked, really. Us Kentuckians get asked out. We don't understand why.
Well, I can't explain really the sort of sway your music has over me. And I go back to it a lot. So I had to meet you and talk to you.
Thanks.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful music up here in this temporary studio in my house upstairs in my spare room. The new album is called Like the River Loves the Sea. It's available now wherever you get music. That was Joan Shelley. And I will not play music today out of respect for the professional music that was played just moments ago. Okay, Boomer? Boomer lives! Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.